ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
And good day, good night. Welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, October 9th, 2018. It was Thanksgiving yesterday. We took a day off. We were thankful to sleep in for once, and we're back today. Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning. Well, I didn't get to sleep in much because I'm with my parents, and my mother has this weird idea that 6 in the morning is a perfectly reasonable time to ask you whether you want pumpkin pie or pecan pie. So there you go.
What? 6 a.m.? Give me some coffee in like 3 hours. Now let me sleep.
Exactly. By the way, we went with the pecan. I've never been a big pumpkin guy. I'm not into the pumpkin spice stuff.
Well, you know, I read something quite interesting yesterday. And pumpkin would be fine if it tasted like pumpkin spice, but it doesn't. Anyways.
Tastes like sugar.
Yeah, pecan pie over a lot of pies, I guess. It would be my choice, too. Welcome to Soccer Today. On the show today, we'll be talking about more than culinary delights. We'll be talking about the Canadian women's national team. That was a culinary delight. Cuba got blown up, but we'll talk about this later on. We'll talk about, as well, the news coming out of San Jose. For once, San Jose decided to spend money, and this time it's on the coach. We'll talk about this, but let's start with the Canadian review. And it's all over. It's done. It's official. Toronto FC out of the 2018 playoffs.
I went to the front of the south end to watch the final moments. People were trying to get the old Three Little Birds singing again. You know, don't worry about a thing. But there wasn't even much motivation for that. I've given the analogy that it feels like the end of a keg party. You know, like you arrive at a keg party at 3 a.m. and it's still a little bit of people trying to get the party going. But there's just something. People are tired, and they're just tired, and they just need to go home. And that's kind of how it felt at the end of it. It was the end of a keg party. The kind of smelled a bit of stale beer, which that's maybe just BMO, and a lot of broken dreams. No one was going home with any more party going on that night. Look, we'll break down TFC season a lot more in the days ahead and at the end of the season, certainly. But there's just was something, you know, whether it's motivation based on the inability to keep yourself playing at that intense a level, a letdown from the CCL, whether it was the injuries. I think the injuries are a major factor, and you know, some people don't want to look at those, but I mean, how can you ignore them? A lot of factors would end, and at the end they just didn't have it at the end, and there's going to need to be some tweaking for sure in the next few months, but they do have a few months off now finally. And it's time to reboot it a little bit. I don't think it needs a complete reset. Like, you're not doing a hard reboot here. You're just maybe turning it on and off, and that might be all that's needed.
You mentioned the injuries, and let's not forget, too, it's the third year in a row where TFC was supposed to be one of the best teams in the league. And that comes with a certain understanding from other teams of how to handle TFC. And a tactical mindset needs maybe to be relooked at for next year to make sure that they change it up a bit. If you want to stay the best team in the league, you need to continue to evolve constantly. Otherwise, teams are going to catch up with you. And I guess in 2018, they caught up, and a lot of teams surpassed TFC. Mixed with injuries and everything, you got the result that you've seen. And the result on Saturday was Vancouver 2. TFC 1 at BMO Field. The one thing that caught my attention was the Canadian-made goal, Davies to Tybert to score. That was maybe a goal 5 years in the making, like Vancouver tweeted out. A Canadian goal 5 years in the making for Vancouver.
Well, you know, only one more month in the making, really. A little big win for the Whitecaps, for sure. We don't want to ignore them in this. Obviously, the news of the day was TFC being eliminated officially, but the Whitecaps did remain in the playoff race with that win as well. Look, that goal, too, to me, speaks of TFC's problems in many ways as well, because it's a breakdown at the back, which has been the story of TFC. Yeah, TFC 2018, a breakdown at the back. That's your subtitle, right?
That's the name of the book? So that's the name of the book you're going to write? Like, TFC, breakdown on the back line.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to write the 2018 story of TFC. Let others have the 2017 Glory Hunters. I'll write the 2018 story. No, it's look, good for Vancouver to get the job done, and they looked okay. You know, like Toronto did come on in that second half. Josie got the goal. They forced the penalty. Josie converted the penalty, which God knows that's not been a sure thing this year. And certainly, if you look back at Javinko missing two penalties earlier in the year. There's lots of woulda, coulda, shouldas in this. I mean, we've talked to death about them throwing away points in Houston and Colorado. I particularly have a bug up my, you know, what about that? Because I think that it was wrong to put the lineups that they did. They did a similar thing in San Jose and only ended up with 1 point in that game. Javinko missed two penalties, which would have given them an additional 4 points right there. There's lots of woulda, coulda, shouldas. But ultimately, as I said, there was just an edge missing this year. And I guess it was to be understood. And it's, you know, then you can't completely look at any individual factor and say that's the only reason. I think it's just a combination of things. And we'll see very quickly. I mean, Greg Vanney was going to be not in trouble at any point this year based on last year. There was no doubt about that. But he does have a job ahead of himself next year.
But next year, if in March he's like 0-3, they might pull my pecky. You never know. Now, going on Vancouver side, you mentioned they stayed in the playoff race with this victory. It's now or never for the Whitecaps as well, with the coaching change that happened a few weeks ago, and that will lead to a big overhaul of the coaching staff for next year. And of course, the players, because of Alfonso Davies going to Munich, is going to trigger a lot of changes. That influx of money will probably change some of the mentalities they have towards big money contracts that they can't potentially have in the following years. So for Vancouver, if they want to get in the playoff with this crop and send Davies away with at least one playoff game, probably not a home one, we'll see if they can get through the wild card first of all to qualify, they need to win out.
Yeah, I'd say pretty much. I mean, they do have the game in hand with RSL right now, so that if they were to win that, they'd be equal in points, but they are behind on the points per game, so I'm not too sure how that math is working. But at any rate, the thing that I look at Vancouver, 60 goals allowed, minus 11. There's your problem. Yeah. And it's any of those teams. Like, the LA is 60 goals allowed as well. We just talked about Toronto. They're at 60 goals allowed too. So those are major problems that you're talking about. And I have beaten the drum for many years that the old adage that defense wins championships is a load of bunk. It doesn't. Offense does. But you can't be terrible defensively. You have to be average defensively with an above average offense. That's your recipe for a championship team in Major League Soccer and most soccer leagues around the world, because it is a sport that, you know, puts a premium on goals. And if you allow them too much, that's going to be just as bad as it's good to score them too much, right? So not enough, I mean, whatever, you know what I'm saying. So it's not the be-all end-all to be a perfect defensive team, but you can't be allowing more than two goals a game, which is where they're at right now. What do you do if you're Vancouver? I was thinking this as I was watching them. They're not, you know, as we've said many times throughout this year, they're not a deeply flawed team, but they're not a particularly good team either. So where would you focus on this? And maybe I've just nailed it there. And again, not to overcompare with Toronto, the biggest difference to me in terms of the on the field was the losses that they had at the back, both injury and you know, guys like Betashore moving on. So if you can be solid at the back, that allows your creative players to get forward and do the things they need to do. And I think maybe that's where Vancouver is right now.
We'll take a look at the Western Conference standings after we talk about the Montreal game, because it is getting quite more clear, the picture, but there's still a lot of possibilities for LA Galaxy and Vancouver and RSL. Seattle's has a little buffer. But let's talk about Montreal 3, Columbus 0, Bedlam at the Stade Saputo. Montreal, a must-win situation. They won. Unfortunately, on Sunday, DC United won too. And at one point, we were like, wow, Chicago scored their first goal. It's 1-0 Chicago. Don't tell me Chicago's going to get that. Oh, wait, it's Chicago. And it's 2-1 DC United.
Well, exactly, yeah. Real quickly, before we get completely into that, we give a little hat tip to the other quote-unquote Canadian team, LAFC, who actually did clinch the playoff spot in their first year last weekend as well. But moving back to Montreal, Kevin, the question I have watching this game is, what the hell? What is with their difference in form between home and away? It does not make sense that they are this extreme.
I know. I don't know what it is. I never understood it anyways in any sport, because for most of where you play, it's the same situation. You have a pitch, similarly the same size, same players. The travel situation, here, we're not traveling in buses for 12 hours, so shouldn't have any effect. I don't know. I think it has to do with trying to be who you are and not rely on the other one. When you go on the road, sometimes you don't listen, the game doesn't unfold the way you like. And the best example is DC United when they played against Montreal last week. They were smart about it. Like, okay, Montreal's good when they have 40 to 50% possession and they can counter and have time to open up the passing lane and spread their fullbacks and wingers and then go forward with Silva and Piatti with the help of Daniel Lovitz and Sagna at fullback. So DC United just gave Montreal the ball. Well, we know what happened. Montreal and Columbus was a great result that way, where you had a Piatti, which was questionable up until the beginning of the game. Nacho Piatti was maybe 75%. It's hard to say. Even Rémygal wouldn't answer that question. But he was saying, look, up until his warm-up before the game, he still had doubts. And it was not a sure thing that Piatti would even play. After the warm-up, Piatti went to see Rémygal. They're like, coach, I feel good. I feel 100%. I feel okay. So then Rémygal like, okay, fine, then you're starting. And we've seen the result. Piatti was instrumental. But it's not just Piatti. It's Saphir Teider as well. One goal, two assists. Alejandro Silva was the spark plug to ignite the team in this game with the first goal, which was a penalty, a clear-cut penalty. For one of the rare instances, Dwayne, of VAR calling a clear-cut error. And everyone was happy about it happening. Like, it's not supposed to, you're not supposed to stop the play to go see the result. But I put myself in Alan Kelly's shoes. Alan Kelly, the referee in this match. Josh Williams there moves his arms to stop the ball in the box. He lets it go. And about a minute later, he's holding his earpiece and he's actually whistling the play down because the VAR was probably saying in his ear, dude, you gotta stop the play. This is a handball, clear-cut handball, clear-cut error. What are you doing? Why didn't you call that? Of course.
We're going to agree to disagree that he moved his arm towards it. I thought it was a clear-cut ball they had.
You have to see it in slow motion. There's a definite movement. After the ball is already in the air coming towards him, he moves his arms outside of his body even more to make sure to put it in front of the ball.
What I'll say is this, is that is clearly called handball in MLS consistently. So I think I don't like the way handball is interpreted around the world in general. I think it's an over penalty for what it is. But
Easy in a way where if your hand is all across your is all along your body and it touches your body and then the ball touches your hand, it's not a handball. He had his arms wide open.
I understand that's how it's called, so I'm not arguing that it wasn't a penalty. I just wish that the handball was there. I wish there was a middle ground, and maybe this isn't the right example or the right time for this debate, but at any rate, goals change games, and that changed the game.
Well, Montreal was dominating up until that point. It was just the first result, and when that happened, Columbus wanted the win too there to get the home field advantage to secure that, because Philly's breathing down their neck. So when that happened, they continued. Of course, you had the great Ali Silva play afterwards, where great pass, and he's coming, great pass by Teider. Silva's coming, top of the box, looks, seeing the shooting lane, shoots, and it's 2-0. And eventually, Piatti scored a third one in the second half. This was Montreal's game. As soon as Montreal got their little confidence back after like 10 minutes of play, and there was no looking back, no looking behind, and Montreal was going to get the result. Just too bad Chicago couldn't do anything on Sunday.
Yeah, well, and this is where, if you're the Impact, this is where you've got to be a little bit concerned. I mean, maybe if you're the Impact, you might actually look at, with the two games left, that the likelihood of Columbus losing out their two games and Montreal winning their two games might be as likely as DC dropping the amount of points they need to not catch them, if you know what I mean. So maybe Columbus is not yet in a safe zone, and Philadelphia, of course, clinched the playoff spot with their result this weekend. In fact, I'm not even convinced, if you look at Philadelphia and New York City FC, that Philadelphia might not just move up to that third spot, and you might end up, if you're the Impact, being staring at a trip to Philly rather than NYCFC.
Which Montreal has a lot better history of going to Philly than to New York City FC. So Chester, Pennsylvania, has been more kind to the Impact, especially this year, than the Yankee Stadium. But you're kind of right. Let's take a look at the playoff battle right now in the Eastern Conference. Let's start on top. Atlanta United, 66 points on top of the Eastern Conference. New York Red Bulls second, 65 points. NYCFC third, 53 points. Then Philly fourth with their win this weekend. Their destruction of Minnesota, 5-1. Philadelphia finish now our fourth with 50 points. Columbus are fifth with 48 points. Montreal is sixth, 5 points behind Columbus, with two games to play for both teams. So that is the question there. And Montreal, you know, the sad story of this thing too is Montreal's differential is minus 7 right now. If there wasn't a 5-goal turnover where DC United, they would have been a minus 2, and they would be close to a tie with Columbus for the differential, because it's the second tiebreaker, right? The first tiebreaker is wins. And Columbus and Montreal, as of right now, have the exact same number of wins with 13. There's a big difference in draws. 9 draws for Columbus, 4 for Montreal. Montreal has 15 defeats this season. But the differential here is a big difference. 48, differential minus 2 for Columbus, minus 7 for Montreal. 48 points for the Crew, 43 Montreal. Then DC close behind, 41 points, 2 behind Montreal, but with 4 games left to play. 2 games in hand, and those 2 games will happen during this international break.
Yeah, just quickly doing the math here. Maybe I think I'm correct on this, but I do not believe that Columbus can beat Montreal in a tiebreaker if they end up tied, because the only way they can end up tied is if Columbus finishes out loss draw and Montreal finishes out win-win, which means Montreal would have an additional win. So so the differential is not going to necessarily matter too much, but it is, it's kind of an indication of Montreal's slow start, and where are points on the board? They're in the pocket, right? So,
and you never know, right? DC can still... you know what, the bed, if they lose one or two, then the pressure, we gotta win now. And I doubt it'll happen the way DC United has been playing. They have that confidence, even when they go down, they come back and only have one game on the road, and then it's in Chicago, which doesn't really feel like a road game, because it feels like a closed stadium game sometimes when you play in Chicago.
Next week's game against Dallas, I think, is, if you're the Impact fan, that's the one you're circling. Certainly when I was looking at it from a Toronto perspective, that was the one that I was looking at as a potential loss for DC United. But it was hard to find. Heading into last week, this doesn't really matter too much now, but when I was looking at DC United's schedule, so this is where it's relevant, and really I had to find a way for them to lose twice, and it kind of came down to them finding a way to drop a point against Chicago in there at some point, because I just didn't see. I saw them winning 4 of their 5, and now that it's 3 or 4, it's even more likely. But they absolutely, if they win Dallas, they've got to feel confident. The Impact have to win out. I mean, there's just no doubt about that.
They have to win. And the thing is, it's 2 winnable games. At home versus TFC on the 21st of October, and then on the road at New England on October 28th. Both of those are winnable. Both of those are against teams that are one out of the playoffs, and the other one, by the time you play them, there might be out of the playoffs. So it's you're not playing Atlanta. Let's just put it this way.
Yeah, and well, I mean, obviously Toronto is going to sell the idea that they're going to look to play spoiler in that match, and certainly that would be one thing that might motivate them, but I don't think that this particular team that has won multiple championships and titles over the past few years is going to be all that motivated in eliminating Montreal. It's just, as much as we'll say it, it's just really not going to matter to them that much.
And if you're Greg Vanney, do you play the kids? Do you use those games remaining as an experiment to see what they really have in their legs?
Yeah, and Columbus, I just looked at the Crew's schedule, and it's not particularly ominous either. They've got Orlando and Minnesota left.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I wouldn't be relying on that.
Well, you never know. MLS will MLS, but Chicago, you had one job, and you failed. All right, so moving on now to the Western Conference standings to for a second. You mentioned FC Dallas, next opponent of DC United. Well, they're playing for the top of the Western Conference. They got 57 points, 31 games, 3 games left to play. They have 4 points ahead of SKC second. LAFC clinch a playoff spot now, 53rd as well. LAFC could finish second or even first in the Western Conference, depending on the result. Portland, where their recent result have climbed all the way from 7th back to 4th. 32 games played, though. Only 2 left, 51 points. So maximum they can have is 57 points if they win out. Sounders are 5th right now, 31 points, 31 games, 50 points. RSL on the bubble at 6th position in the Western Conference with 46 points. Only 1 ahead of the Galaxy and 3 ahead of Vancouver. Galaxy and Vancouver have not quit. The only thing is the Galaxy only have 2 games left. RSL only has 2 games left. Vancouver has 3. Vancouver could potentially, if they win out, get 9 points. Will bring them to 52 points, and they could climb up all the way to 6th or 5th. It would be possible, even 4th, depending on what happens with Portland. But it's not necessarily going to be easy for Vancouver, and they have no more margin of errors whatsoever. They have to win out. They have to hope for RSL and the Galaxy that they drop points, and that's the only way they can get a spot in the playoff. And when we say a spot, it's slipping in barely for a spot in the playoffs.
Yeah, they can get as high as 52, so you might as well all but eliminate them in this Cascadia with the other Cascadia clubs. I can't see them not getting more results in there. Portland only has 2 games left, but you should think that they get at least one more, and they have the tiebreaker advantage there in Seattle. Not playing as I think Seattle peaked a little too early this year. I don't see them repeating. They'll make the playoffs, I believe, but they don't see them repeating a run to the final again. Look, the West. I don't know what to make of the West, to be honest with you, Kevin. Any of those teams could get out of it. I think that I have a very difficult time. We'll do our playoff preview when the playoffs start, but I have a very difficult time not seeing MLS Cup, you know, basically in either Atlanta or New York.
For sure.
Really, I lean heavily towards Atlanta at this point.
The mid-table of the Western Conference, in my mind, is better than the Eastern Conference, but the top end of the Eastern Conference, so Atlanta, New York, are clearly the crop of the league, clearly the best in the league, especially Atlanta. Now with the Almiron injury, we'll see how serious it is. When you leave the pitch crying like you just stub your toe at 3 a.m. in the morning when you're 12 years old, yeah, maybe it's really, really serious, and we'll see. Maybe that was the last time Almiron actually played in an Atlanta uniform. Rumors coming out of Arsenal in Europe in the last week mentioned that Almiron might be sold to Arsenal for between 11 to 13 million euros. And that could be potentially his last match already played for Almiron and Atlanta United. So we'll keep an eye on that in the next few weeks to see how. Because, look, that could derail Atlanta's playoff plans if Almiron's injured. Then you have to rely, okay, Barco, you were on the bench and you were in the doghouse a bit this year. It's all on you now. You and Martinez, whatever happened to Martinez after his record-breaking goal, he's kind of disappeared a bit, which is kind of normal, I guess, and we'll see. Now, Dwayne, before we move to the Canadian Women's National Team and World Cup qualifiers of the weekend, a new coach has been named in San Jose, and for once, it's actually a name that we know, a coach that you've seen play live. And I was actually surprised yesterday when the announcement dropped that Matias Almeida, former Chivas de Guadalajara manager, has been named as San Jose Quakes manager. Dwayne, they spent money. They actually spent money.
Yeah, Almeida obviously had a lot of success with Chivas winning the CCL. So he's not exactly coming cheap, and he's, you know, he's arguably amongst the managers that I've dealt with, maybe one of the most famous ones I've dealt with, right? So it's very skinny. He's impossibly skinny. Anyway, that is said. Yeah, I was surprised by this a little bit. I think most of the league was surprised by this. It kind of leaked out, and it's been confirmed. There's a couple different angles. Obviously, San Jose onto itself is not a team that's particularly spent a ton of money over the years. This might be an indication of that, and it might be an indication of I think maybe
Mexican players. They're
looking at, I think they're looking at this as much as a recruitment tool. So they spend a little bit of money here so they can get maybe knowledge. And if you look at what he did with Chivas, he wasn't exactly working with the top end Mexican players at Chivas, right? He got a lot out of guys that maybe weren't at the top of the radar. That, you know, obviously TFC saw all those guys in the spring, and that was the weakest team by far that they played. But it was a team that maybe played a team concept better than most, and that might be something that they'd like in San Jose. But the other part about this, it's the league. It's a coup for the league, because this is a guy that has, you know, could probably pick his job down there, and has not. Maybe even could find himself back at the national team if he wanted to, right? So this is a pretty big coup for them in terms of that he's choosing to come back and play or sort of manage in MLS as opposed to Liga MX is something that's maybe unexpected. So that could caught me off guard. And we're just for the record, we are looking to talk to someone out in San Jose about this, but certainly right now it's something that I'm still trying to process.
The weather of the Bay Area for sure is more... It's easier to convince a manager saying, okay, look, half your games you'll be here. You'll be here most of the time. You won't have to go to Toronto, Montreal, Minnesota that too often. So how about you come here? And you mentioned when he was managing Chivas. If you don't know, if you are a unaware of the Chivas situation in Guadalajara, they have to only play Mexican players. It's a very nationalistic attitude that Chivas has, and you have to be Mexican to play for Chivas. And that means that sometimes you don't have the same depth of players. There's no Gignac. There's no Cavallini. Yeah, I know. I equivalent Cavallini and Gignac as well.
Obviously.
But you don't have any foreigners to supplement the amount of talent that you have. So if you're playing and managing Chivas, you have to find Mexican players. And sometimes you have to find a round peg player and trying to fit him into the square peg hole, and sometimes you just take the file out, you file it a little, and it'll fit. And that's what Almeida has been able to do with Chivas. Now, going into San Jose, this is the first indication in forever that they're willing to do something, that they're willing to spend money on a coach, take hard decisions, and this is going to create a player overhaul as well in this offseason, because Almeida is not coming here to finish dead last in the Western Conference. And if he keeps the same players, guess what? They'll be dead last in the Western Conference. So for Almeida and San Jose, if you're a fan of the Quakes, we've been talking about the Quakes for a few months now, telling them that, look, things need to change. You need to get you-know-what in gear to take the hard decisions, decide to spend the money, and cut some players that should have been dealt with maybe a few years ago. Wondolowski, he's not there next year. I have a feeling if he is, he's that super sub coming in for 5 minutes late in the game as a legend of the club. But that's it. And those are the type of hard decisions that are easier to swallow when it's a manager at the level of Almeida.
Yeah, I mean, 20 points, they're tragic number for being eliminated for winning the Wooden Spoon is one right now. So it's at 0.63 points per game. I'm just going to give you their line right now. This is one of the worst lines we've seen in MLS in recent history. It's, you know, the 13 points that DC United had was the worst that I can remember. The worst literally. So, but this one, 32 games played right now, only 4 wins, 20 losses, 8 draws, 69 goals allowed, 48-4 for minus 21. They only won 2 games at home, 2-9-5, 2-11-3 on the road. So it's, ugly.
Minus 21. Like, geez, what is this? Like an odd line?
Well, for Major League Soccer, that might as well be minus 90, right? Like more regular league around the world.
Yeah,
this is a league based on parity. To only win 4 games is pretty bad.
It is.
You know, as you said, there'll be an overhaul there. There has to be. Will Wando be back? I mean, I could see him sticking around, but not at a very low salary. I could also see him as a third striker at a contending team coming off the bench because he is a poacher.
Yeah.
And maybe true. If you're – I got a team that likes to play a little direct late, you might find some use there for him. I could see him fitting in with a – you know, any team that sort of maybe wants a veteran presence and a little bit of late goal scoring. Maybe Philly might find use for him. They've certainly had similar players in the past in Latou, so yeah, so that would be something maybe that might fit there. But that's, you know, who knows?
Well, does he want to play anywhere else? That's the question too, right? Knowing Chris Wondolowski, having a chance to see him play for a long time, and, you know, maybe if it's not San Jose, it's no one. Maybe he will decide to, you know what, the club wants to move away from me. I'm not going to, I don't want to move my family, move everything I have for just a season or two, just to start something new. Maybe I'm quite content by just calling it quits. And if he gets the record, Londo's record, he's only one away now. If he gets it by the end of the season, why continue anyways? And we'll see. And it might be all in the decision process that Wondolowski has to decide in the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, certainly if you were to get that goal to tie Landon, that would be something that would make convey him to retire outright. Look, when the end comes, it can be pretty ugly right now. I'm just trying to draw up his numbers particularly for this, specifically for this year. Where are you here? 2018, yes, he's 49 shots, 10 goals scored, so he's back in double digits. So he's not exactly not scoring, but it's you're not... This is what I'll say. Yes, he's got 10 goals, but he's their target, right? So
everyone's giving him the ball. Like, what I wish they would do with St. Clair in the weekend. What I wish they would have done with St. Clair against Cuba. Like, why, Utama, why do you score four goals? Let St. Clair score four so she's closer to Wambach. Anyways, that's going to be our topic in the next few minutes.
I don't want to like end our last conversation with Chris Wondolowski. Is we talked about, what do we talk about? MLS lifers all the time on the show. We have for years. He's an MLS lifer, and he's an MLS lifer that is absolutely epitomizes it. But all lifers come to an end, right? And does he have a value for a team out there as not their primary focal point? I think he probably does if he wants to play in 2019. I could also see him making the move south to one of the LA teams for similar reasons. Stays in California, could probably, you know, fly back and forth if he wanted to, if he wanted to leave his family back in the Bay Area. I mean, there's options there. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting offseason. Certainly, you can expect a lot of overhaul. I guess we've already kind of segued to the women's qualifying. Maybe we'll just go all right now.
Yes, Canadian women's national team started their World Cup qualifying journey this weekend. Started Friday night against Jamaica, Canada 2, Jamaica 1. And it continued yesterday versus Cuba, Canada 12, Cuba 0. Yeah, first of all, it was a lot of young players. Adriana Leon, 4 goals. Jordan Oitema, 4 goals as well. And then you have a plethora of players scoring 1 goal. What I was thinking is, look at St. Clair creating, giving the ball away. How about you shoot? How about you are being a bit selfish today, Christine? How about you score 3 or 4 goals today and get closer? She's 10 away right now from Wambach's record. She could have used that game to be maybe 5 away by the end of the day, but it wasn't meant to be. Canada, though, it was meant to be. Scored 12 goals. And Adriana Leon, Jordan Huitema. Plus, imagine when Jesse Fleming and Becky... Oh, yeah, we have actually a good crop of generation, a good crop of youngsters coming up, maybe at the right time for 2019. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm going to correct you only because there's a point to be made here. Canada actually shut out Jamaica 2-0. It wasn't 2-1 because there's only 2-0, been one game in this entire...
I have a spot on my TV screen, so that's why the 0 looked like a 1.
There you go. There's only been one game in the entire tournament so far in which both teams have scored, which is a glaring thing standing out at this cup. But in terms of, look, there's a GIF. I tweeted it out last night of Sinclair when she did score her goal. And the girls around her, and I say girls purposely because they quite literally had their hands up. And Christine looked at them and sort of brushed them away and said, don't celebrate. Like, don't celebrate. It's embarrassing. And I suspect as much as, you know, she kind of probably would like to pass Abby in some level, it's not her primary motivation at this point. It's to make sure Canada is left in good hands. I think she's probably going to just catch her because I do believe she'll stick around for the Olympics in 2020 as well. So that will be likely.
She's got 2 years, you know, to score 10 goals. This should be done in next year. If Christine St. Clair plays the way Christine St. Clair has played, she's going to score 10 goals in, 13 months? So by the end of next season, she'll be done.
Yeah, I mean, hell, she might get a couple against Costa Rica, right? You never know. It's going to be right on the edge. You know, the dream is that she does it at the World Cup or something, but certainly
against the U.S. Come on, okay? I have to do a little rant here, Dwayne. I've been playing FIFA, okay? And in FIFA, you're Kim Hunter, Alex Hunt, in the Journey story mode. You're Kim Hunter, your sister to Alex Hunter. And you play for, you're 16 and 17 years old, and you play for the U.S. Women's National Team. And there's one, spoilers here, there's one game in the qualifying process where you play against Canada. And they made Canada to be the worst. They made Canada to be like really a bunch of crybabies where there's a fictional player called Tremblay. And Tremblay just starts berating Kim Hunter at the end of the game. Like, yeah, Hunter, you know, trying to do this at the real level. We're better than you. Like, this is not Canada. This is like the U.S. The roles have been inverted. Who wrote this? Isn't this game made in Vancouver? You should know better.
Yeah, they maybe start counting at any rate. I was talking to people online about this last night, this tournament, and I don't know what the answer is. I was wondering, Kevin, whether we should even start to look at, you know, how women's hockey does it, where you just have the top four seeds play each other for seeding and then the rest playoff for, you know, two spots in a quarterfinal type thing, because I don't know what's gained from 12-0. And you look at the other scores in this tournament, like 6-0, the U.S. beat Mexico, and that's supposed to be maybe the emerging power in Mexico.
That's supposed to be closer, but what, look, we're not seeing the result of Liga MX Femenil yet. It's been, what, 2 years? Only 2 years? Not even 2 full years, so you don't see the result, but yeah, there's a big disparity. Let's call a spade. There's a big gap of talent, and not just talent. It's mostly infrastructures, and between, when I say infrastructures, I'm not talking about like big training centers. No, I'm just talking about basic team management. There's like U.S., which is the team that is best managed in the infrastructures and the women's game around the world. There's the European teams now, France and England and Sweden, that are close. Canada is like in the same category of Sweden and those crop of not necessarily World Cup contenders like Japan or the U.S. every year, but between 5th and 8th in the world, and if everything goes right, they can contend for something. And then there's the rest that barely have a coach, barely have trainers, infrastructures, social media accounts, or, yeah, it's the Wild West when you go down that death chart.
Well, TNT was publicly looking for money, donations, to get them to this tournament.
Yeah, it's really helpful when Indiegogo is your biggest sponsor.
Yeah, I mean, this is GoFundMe, you know, right? Like, you know, Patreon to sponsor a national team. It's absurd.
Patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. I agree with you.
Support podcasts if you want, but not national teams. That's a bit much. No, I think there's a few things you could do here, but they're going to involve an investment. And so far what CONCACAF has done, and if for those who don't know, Catherine LeBlanc, the former Canadian women's national team player, was hired as like a consultant for women's football in the region, and they've essentially been flying her around to various islands, basically focusing on the Caribbean to run camps there. So they bring these girls out and they have a nice day, and I'm sure it is a nice day for the women that are, the young women that are there, but is this ultimately what you need to do in this region to improve it, by having a nice day out where you, you know, show them some drills and then go to the next island? It seems like more of a photo op to me than it seems like actual action, right? There's nothing against Catherine LeBlanc and the small effort they are making here. It's but the key on the small.
Yeah,
I think you need to have more tournaments for these teams to play and more opportunities for them to play each other and not get blown at 12-0. Like, should we maybe in the Olympic years and World Cup years for the non-World Cup or Olympic participants, maybe we have another Gold Cup?
I have an idea, and I know you mentioned it on social media, Dwayne, but you know, part of the world, club is very big. In the women's game, there's some countries that they have a club scene that it's pretty big. Europe is there, and WSL, it's not the way we want, but it's still there, and it still produces players. In a good or bad year, it doesn't matter. Players are playing. But a lot of teams could be 2 years without playing games. And the national team players just play, example, university, or they have to go abroad to just make it like in the first, second, third division, whatever. How about a Nations League that is more than a Nations League in the men's game? How about, you mentioned, don't make Canada, U.S., Mexico, and like Costa Rica. Don't put those four in CONCACAF, but have the rest of the teams play one game a week against each other for a few months. for a year, for 2 years. And he'll get better. And that's what they need. Consistent games against teams that are in a close level so they can challenge each other and slowly climb that ladder. If you play Canada every single week, yes, you're going to get your ass handed to you multiple times and you're going to get discouraged and no one gains anything from it. But if, your example, your, let's use Dominica, even though I don't even think they have a women's program, but let's use an example like TNT. If you're TNT and you play Cuba every single week for about 3-4 months, well, you're going to get something. You're going to create a certain amount of tactical awareness with each other. You're going to create a certain amount of... The level technically should rise. And I guess a kind of a Nations League with selection from different countries that you give more playing time. Never mind international break. They don't have any... Just make them play. Just let them play.
Yeah, look, maybe Jamaica might be a team that's sort of on the, you know, in that cusp to emerge. They did upset Costa Rica, although if you look at the stats of that game, it was one of those one-off things where Costa Rica had 17 shots on target and couldn't manage to find the back of the net, whereas Jamaica managed to get a goal with four. So that upset happened. Good for them, but I wouldn't exactly say that's repeatable. I'm just looking at Jamaica's lineup, too, and there's a lot of, when you look at their clubs where they're playing, there's a lot of stars and stripes there, right? So that you're looking at expats for the most part that are making up that team, and I don't know if that's sustainable either in terms of long-term developing the programs in these countries. I think you have to have some domestic solutions and then supplement them with players that are expats. That's fine, but yeah, this is, I think you just need to have them play more. Like, exactly, a Nations League. You could even tie it into the Men's Nation League. You could, when, especially when they're you know, these Caribbean nations are going around, you go, okay, well, you're taking your women's team too and you're playing each other. And why not? It's, you're going to consolidate. You're going to be a little bit more of expense, but you're going to make it a little cheaper than doing it separately. So,
and let's face it, Dwayne. For a long time, FIFA and CONCACAF have mentioned that they do see the women's game at the same level. But guess what? They don't. And here's a good example. FIFA Women's World Cup final day next year.
It's the Gold Cup.
They scheduled the Gold Cup and the Copa Libertadores final on exactly the same day. And guess what? The Women's World Cup will be the first game played that day. So it does feel like an appetizer for the rest of the games. So it's about time, I'm going to say my famous fresh expression now. It's about time that the lips follow the boots. And that it's more the boots follow the lips. And they stop saying that the women's game is important to them. And they start acting like it is. So
there's no way that you would find a... nothing championship in the same day as the World Cup final.
Nothing. So there's no other games. There's no FIFA U17 games during the men's World Cup final. There's, you cannot have a FIFA sanctioned game basically during the FIFA men's World Cup. Why is it different for the women? If you want it people, shouldn't. It shouldn't, right? And if you want people to consider it as important, they're going to see through this. You have to consider it as important before everyone else. And I guess FIFA and CONCACAF in this example don't. CONMEBOL, by the way, as well. So it's, yeah, blame FIFA. Hashtag blame FIFA.
CONMEBOL their attitude towards, they don't even hide their attitude towards women's football, at least. And there's some kind of, I don't know whether there's just credit for that, but at least they're not being hypocrites about it, whereas they're outright hostile towards it. So it's not surprising there. Whereas CONCACAF makes noises about it, but then doesn't follow through. And FIFA, obviously, the same way. And what's a shame about that too is that I think that I have a feeling this Women's World Cup, based on what I'm seeing in UEFA in terms of the quality of play rising up there, is going to be brilliant. It's going to be just as exciting as this Men's World Cup.
Unpredictable.
This past year has been. Yeah.
Who's going to win? France? I can see France, England make a run in that tournament. I can see the U.S. make a run. I can see, heck, Canada make a run. Japan's going to be tough to beat. It's wide open. Even the Netherlands, I can see the Netherlands coming out of the group. Heck, what's the last time we've seen the Netherlands coming out of a group in the international tournament? You never know, and this tournament is going to be fascinating in France.
England, yeah, there's lots of interesting storylines into that World Cup, and we'll talk a lot about them in the months ahead leading up to it. But I think we probably talked a lot about this too much at this point. At this point for today, certainly we'll have more coverage of World Cup qualifying for the women as the business end of this tournament, it gets close, because really this tournament is about one game of
Canada,
me,
US,
Canada beat Mexico. And then the winner of that, it will go on to the World Cup. The loser will have to play a third place game, likely against Costa Rica or maybe Jamaica, now that Jamaica has got the result. So it's still some stuff to play for next week, but right now 12-0 kind of says it all. 12-0 Canada over Cuba. That should not be happening in 2018.
No, it shouldn't. And we'll talk more about this. And even if you're Cuba, you lose 12-0, guess what? The backers, the government's like, well, you guys can't compete. Let's slash your funding. It's not a good look on anyone. And I hope that it does change in the near future, but it won't this week. So we'll come back tomorrow. We'll take a look at the Premier League weekend tomorrow, and we'll take a look at the rest of the world of football with a soccer perspective. For Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. You can follow us on social media at SoccerTodaySBN, at Kev Laramie for me, at 24th Minute for Dwayne. And until tomorrow, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.